advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with me, Todd.
You say funny things.
Hello and welcome once again to the Sofa King Podcast.
Yeah, yup.
A thought popped into my head right now. I can't believe how long we've just stuck to this and fucking...
Yeah, we're just still fucking, doing it.
It just, it has become religion. Like, it is Sunday morning.
It's, yep.
We're here, we're recording.
It's what you do.
It just becomes a thing.
Yep. It's like 21 days to habit thing.
Yeah.
If you do something 21 days, it becomes habit.
And it didn't feel like this, though, like 6 months ago. It was like
Or 400 days.
Yeah. You know,
whatever it is.
We're getting it, though. I mean, it is going, and fan appreciation. Matter of fact, hand me one of them cobras.
Who are these? I was just thinking about, am I going to do it again? Cobra. It's like room temperature.
I'm good. Nah.
Should
have stuck them in the fridge. What the hell's wrong with you? So thank you, Chris Lewis.
We're going to have to share this other one with a straw. Two straws.
Dave still has a full one.
No, this is my own tea. He dumped it out.
What?
Take that, Chris. He's like, you motherfucker.
No, I don't really care. Yes, no, I took one drink of it and I dumped it out because I'm not a big beer drinker and I don't really want to drink it.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't had.
You're by definition a big beer drinker.
Colt 45. So
I never had it.
That's right. Now we're talking some LED shit.
There we go.
You are blacker than me.
Are you really going to open this?
What do you mean? Am I really going to open it?
I'm like two whiskeys and I can't go.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, what you guys may or may not realize.
Are you getting volcano around?
Volcano Cobra.
Getting a volcano cartridge.
I did want to give a shout out to Ring Life for sending me a t-shirt. He hit me up on Instagram.
You know what? Yeah.
And said he wanted to send a shirt. And I said, cool, like, I'll send you some stuff back. And he was like, really? You know, like, nobody ever sends me anything.
I got those exact words.
Yeah. But, so I was like, yeah, man, cool. Like, thanks. And so he sent a shirt out and I did get a shirt and, I want to say thank you for that. I'm trying to find the Instagram thing. He is, at Best Fight Gear on Instagram. Cool dude. I talked to him for a little bit. And if you're hearing this, get back to me. I know you were moving at the time we talked. If you're done moving, if you're ready, hit me up and I'll send you some stuff. So, just get back to me.
Yeah. I got a gift this week too. Civil Savage grooming. It's civil_savage_grooming. And they make like beard oil and beard products. And, they were, you know, it's confused by my beard picture. It looked like it was grandiose. And I told them that it's just a see-through. And I tried to explain to them. They said, who tames that savage beard? And I was like, it doesn't take much, man. It's pretty thin. Those are just good pictures. It's good lighting and a filter. But they were insistent. And they sent me some beard balm and oil. And it's awesome. It smells like a popsicle or something, though.
Yeah, it does.
It makes me like thirsty when I wear it. I'm like, oh, man. Like, you guys don't know what La Rosa is. But we have these little this little company in town. I think that's just local, right?
I think so.
Yeah, these little dudes. That little Mexican dudes push little ice cream carts all over town with bells on them, and it's called La Rosa, and they have little like fruit popsicle bars, and it smells like a lemon lime La Rosa bar, so it's actually pretty awesome. But I want a popsicle constantly.
Two quick shout outs on my end, actually three. One for at B Kempinski on Instagram. He was at the I think he said the George H.W. Bush library.
And oh, yeah, that was a good picture.
There's a replica of the Oval Office in the White House, and apparently he snuck in and sat at the desk and had someone take a picture of him at the desk, and then there's two
picture
frames behind him, and he made one of them El Yucateco and one of them the Sofa King podcast thing. So that was a really cool Instagram thing. I wanted to give a shout out to David James from Canada. and he posted a picture of him wearing his Sofa King. I want to everybody who's been posting your pictures.
Yeah,
I mean, we're kind of overwhelmed with pictures, so we really thank all of you guys. But this one was particularly funny because he's from Canada, and he said that he was basically talking shit because we were saying that the Kool-Aid man was going to jump through a wall filled with maple syrup and that Canadians would be soaking up the syrup with pancakes and back bacon. And he referenced all of that in his thanks
I laughed
for
out
the
loud.
Shirt. And then finally, I again want to give a shout out to the local nomads. They posted a really dope picture on Instagram of
where were they at?
Bryce Canyon.
Yeah.
And he was
beautiful.
First thing in the morning, beautiful. Looks like the, I don't know. Is it part of the Grand Canyon? Is it a different canyon? I do not know.
It's a canyon and it's
a
Bryce.
Canyon and it's Bryce and it's beautiful. And he's doing a shot of El Yucateco first thing in the morning
from the bottle. Swig from the bottle. Yeah. That's how my grandpa used to drink Matlock.
And it looks awesome. So yeah. you got some El Yucateco in a beautiful canyon.
Yeah, and they appreciated it. They really liked that photo. It was awesome. And
he said that they hadn't tried it until they started listening to the show. So apparently we've convinced him to become
thank you,
a
local
fan.
Nomads. And I think they have a podcast. They're out of San Diego. Is that what that is?
No.
I don't know. Maybe I'm confusing them with somebody else.
I think you are.
Well, anyway, check out the Local Nomads podcast on iTunes now. See how that goes down.
Anyway, so thanks to all of those people. So topic today is the Winchesters. And I don't mean Sam and Dean or Charles Emerson. Those are all famous Winchesters.
Who's that, you nerd? What was that about? Who is that?
Nothing. You don't recognize any of those Winchester names. Huh. Sam and Dean Winchester or Charles Emerson Winchester.
No, maybe I didn't study very good.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Well, I'm just going to let it ride then.
God damn it. I got to Google it.
You know Brent can't not look something
he
up.
He can't not know.
Yeah.
Charles Emerson Winchester is a character from MASH.
Oh.
And Sam and Dean Winchester are the brothers from Supernatural.
Yeah, see, I'm not that old.
And then everybody 25 nerdy. That's listening right now was like, what the fuck is MASH?
Yeah.
Well, like potatoes?
MASH. It's a new dance. It's a new dance by Yo Gotti.
Like the Monster MASH?
So yeah. Anyway, those were my
new old man.
So the Winchester, the gun that won the West.
Yes.
The gun, which, the ammo, the house, the family. Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted to look into it because we knew that any of you who have heard of or seen the Winchester Mystery House. I like that Brent simultaneously calls me a wuss for not wanting to drink the beer, and he's drinking
his
beer in
it.
Complete not, misery.
That's what fucking by definition hey, not
I'm
a wuss. Caught, I'm doing it.
I'm going to get caught like coming out of fucking somewhere with a fucking just 12-pack of King Cobra. Like, what are you doing? Nothing.
Nothing.
Like, going home? Like, you don't drink beer? Nope. Mm-mm. That's from a black cousin.
I think you missed the definition of wuss. You're like, I like how Brent calls me a wuss for crying about shit while he does it, sits over there, does it, and doesn't cry about shit.
But you you are making a face, though.
I would rather just not do something I'm not enjoying. And if by definition that makes me a wuss, I'm a happier individual.
I'm enjoying it. Actually, I'm very. All of our beer snob friends are going to be upset when
they're going to be very upset. And technically, it isn't even beer, right? It's a malt liquor.
Yeah, I put King Cobra up against all their beers.
What makes a malt liquor a malt liquor?
It's malt.
Malt,
it's
obviously, but like, it doesn't taste weird to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm not beer snobby enough. It tastes good.
Well, there's beer snobs all over the world listening
malt,
to this right now. And they're like losing their shit.
Yeah, for sure.
I will blindfold
makes,
those motherfuckers
a
and
malted
put some
liquor
King Cobra in a glass.
Sure.
And they will be like, undertones.
This, has some woody undertones. Like, smells of cinnamon.
Yep. And I'll slap
and
the
fairies.
Fuck out of them. Be like, that was King Cobra,
idiot.
Bitch.
Yeah, you just got King Cobra and Colt 45 and Chupacabra piss.
Chupacobra.
You got Chupacobra.
Yeah. So it has evolved into Chupacobra.
It's way better out of the can than it is out of my whiskey glass. That didn't work out.
Well, you just had all the foam.
I'm just changing it up.
That looks like piss.
Yeah. It does look like
trucker piss.
Yes, it does.
Trucker piss.
Yeah.
I saw a funny meme.
Hey, I just want to put out there, man, we're way off track on this one. I want to put out there, though,
what's that guy's
just
name? Yeah, what's that guy's name?
Watch the side of the road, and you'll always see like 1 liter bottles or like 20 ounce bottles filled with fluid.
Pee?
Yeah, that is not the beverage that was supposed to be in there. It's trucker pee. They throw the bottles out the window.
Why don't they just hold on to them and throw it away when they get to
the
garbage?
I have no idea, but after I found out that fact, I see them all over.
I know why they throw them out the window.
So they don't stop.
The fucking prisoners have to pick it up?
No. Because there was that one time where they were on crank, and it was 4 in the morning.
Maybe. That's evidence.
And they were fucking thirsty, and they grabbed what they thought was their bottle of Mountain Dew, and they took a swig of their own man juice and then decided they should just throw it out the window.
Super salty, just like remnants of...
They were tired. They weren't looking...
You know when you get the piss that smells like tuna? You know, it's just like so potent.
It is not a tuna.
It's not a tuna.
I've had corn nuts. My piss smelled like corn nuts before.
That happens. That's when you've been eating more woodsy stuff.
I'm just saying, you only need to drink your own piss once before you start throwing it out the window.
There's a bunch of dudes that do it. Like, there was a UFC guy that used to drink his piss every morning. I don't know what the thing behind that is, but
rehydration.
Maybe if you're on a fucking raft in the middle of the ocean.
Well, I understand it because I mean, when you're in a water crisis, you really that is the best way to
you put it.
Water.
You have to put it in your butt though.
Refilter.
Governor Brown wants us to drink our own piss, but I'll keep drinking water.
I guess that's the thing. If you give yourself an enema with seawater, you'll live longer because the salt doesn't have to pass through your system.
That's true.
So the Winchesters.
I do it for fun.
Speaking of salt enemas, the Winchesters. Wanted to look into it because I wanted to look into it because I falsely thought that Winchester was one of the great gun designers, like he himself. Mm-hmm. And looking into it, he was not. So the main guy who started everything was Oliver Fisher Winchester, and he was the main Winchester guy.
Yeah, but that's not how Winchester got started.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, because I knew that he ran in circles with Smith and with Wesson and with Browning and with Henry, who made the Henry rifle. Like, I knew that all these geniuses of machining and gun engineering, the people whose names still bear arms companies, I knew they were all in the same time period. They worked with each other. They interned under each other. And I thought Winchester was one of those guys, but he wasn't. He didn't know shit about machining guns. He was just a businessman.
My big realization is I didn't realize like the bullet, like the ammo was such a factor. You know what I mean?
That
like,
was the key.
Yeah. And think about, at some point in time, they just had bullets. They didn't pour gunpowder down the fucking barrel and stuff it with gauze and put a
It was like a lead-cased bullet that was packed with...
Yeah, and then they had this like fucking little paper one
with cork primer, the volcanic cartridge.
Yeah.
Like, all this.
So the volcanic is actually what was actually Smith and Wesson came up with.
And things that seem so obvious today were just like, it seemed silly when you looked at some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm into guns and actually researching Winchester. I was talking to Dave about this before the show. It's amazing what you find when you just spend a little time researching something that you wouldn't have normally researched.
Like, right.
I'm into guns. I know Winchester. I know the rifles. I've been to the Winchester Mansion, you know, like just different things. And you look at the history and you're like, oh, fuck, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, there are interesting things about everything when you look into
it. Yeah, once you dig into it, shit gets pretty fucking interesting. So,
we're covering Barbie next week. That's
very interesting, like how they got the Barbie crotch.
Right.
That's right.
I mean, how they came up with that.
There was a lot of debate as to whether it should be
anatomically correct. Do we put a line?
Yes. Do we not? Line or no line? You know, there was two camps at the Barbie factory, line or no line.
Hard nipples, flat nipples, what are we looking for?
It's very common.
Do we shade them?
It was like the Apple Lisa camp thing. It was going on at Barbie, line or no line.
What?
Yeah. I got two tech. Yeah, there you go. You got it now. Now you got it.
I tracked you. So Oliver Fisher Winchester was born in 1810 in Boston, and he grew up on a farm, and he was one of those kind of natural business folk, and he went from working on the farm to opening up a dry goods store to sell to other farmers, made a good amount of money with the dry goods store, so he actually bought a factory that started making clothing. And he started as a clothing manufacturer, and basically he saw that a division of Smith and Wesson that was called the Volcanic Repeating Arms wasn't doing very well because the Volcanic cartridge didn't fucking work. It was a hollow ball filled with black powder with a cork
primer.
It's
fucking weird too. It had the one finger hole. Like, the whole thing was weird. It looked like that was the one that looked like a pistol with a stock, right? Is that the volcanic? Yeah. Had the pistol with a rifle stock
kind
on it?
Kind of, That's the volcanic pistol, it's called.
Yeah.
So it was just one division of Smith & Wesson, and he ended up getting a group of venture capitalists to pool their money together in 1850. And they collectively bought the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company.
Yep.
And then he was a hustler and a businessman. So by they do this in 1850 and they buy this from Smith and Wesson. And then by 1857, he had become the principal stock owner with different wheels and deals and buying out other partners and all this kind of stuff. So then he moved it to New Haven, Connecticut, and he called it the New Haven Arms Company in 1857. Yeah. And it was gradually starting to get closer to what became the Winchester Company.
I was impressed about how much money that was back then. He originally bought, Oliver Winchester bought 80 shares at $25 per share. I was like, that's a lot of fucking
money. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. I was like, how many shirts is that motherfucker selling? Like,
He's making a lot of money. Like he was a well-off.
He was Abercrombie and Winchester, which later became.
Because he had two he had two factories, one in New Haven and one in New York that was selling shirts. So he was a you know, good-sized businessman. And then again, he bought this Volcanic Arms thing because it had become insolvent. It wasn't making any money. So he bought it not necessarily to own this shitty gun design, but now I own a gun factory. Like if I can get some good designs, I can churn some shit out of this factory because I now own the factory, was basically what he was after.
And Horace Smith and Daniel Wesson, they actually acquired the patents from Jennings. Jennings had a rifle that was a single shot, and they actually worked for Jennings and then moved into making their own things, and that turned into Smith and Wesson.
Yeah.
Which was interesting that, man, that was the biggest thing for me. I didn't know that Winchester was a shirt maker. Like that was the, I was like, what the fuck? This guy was a stockholder. But then he was just a stockholder. Like he was just a guy that funded Smith and Wesson.
As an investment. Yeah.
He saw it as an investment. Yeah. But later on, he was the pivotal point of marketing and turning this weapon into what it is known for today.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was still.
Yeah, he used masterminds behind that, but the marketing that went into it and just the know-how that he had, he put into it, and it turned into this amazing piece of work that nobody had seen before, you know, that everybody used.
And he really had to weather it. I mean, when he first bought it, I mean, it was already an insolvent company, so it wasn't making
it was
any money.
Yeah, it was doing horrible.
It took him a long time to make it become something that was profitable.
Yeah.
In that time, he ends up having three children. He has two daughters named Anne and Hannah, and then he ends up having a son, very strange middle name, William Wirt Winchester.
Mm-hmm. That's my middle name.
Wirt, W-I-R-T. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he has a son, William Wirt Winchester, who becomes important later. And he starts going through all this, and then they end up, so the volcanic cartridge isn't working, et cetera. And he ends up hiring a guy named Benjamin Tyler Henry, who improves upon the volcanic cartridge design.
Let's talk about Henry.
Yeah.
Okay. Where he came from.
Yeah.
Henry was his shop foreman at Winchester Clothing.
He repaired the sewing machines.
Yeah, right. he was a man who went around and repaired the foot-powered sewing machines.
He was mechanically inclined, like I've said before.
Mechanically inclined, who actually trained as a gunsmith when he was like 18 or something.
Oh, I didn't
like
know that.
Yeah, under Smith and Wesson.
Under Smith and Wesson.
Oh, I didn't read that.
Yeah, he had an apprenticeship under Smith and Wesson. So
but they were all young because Smith and Wesson weren't Smith and Wesson.
No,
they were gunsmiths for a place called Robbins and Lawrence Arms Company.
Yeah.
They just happened to work there and he apprenticed under them.
Which had the patents for Jennings that they bought eventually later on down the road. So all of this big tangled web started off with these two guys meeting this other guy who incidentally worked for a clothing factory repairing sewing machines that in turn came and invented the Henry repeating rifle because they knew that they needed to basically make the rifle better. Like, how do we make this repeating rifle better?
He simplified it. Yeah. It required too many small parts. It said
simplified it, made it easier to use. The magazine was easier to load. And by magazine, I mean the tube underneath the barrel, which feeds the chamber. So,
he ends up making a rifle that holds 17 rounds and it's they also design the rounds because yep. that's one of the most important yep. parts of this thing is he designs a 44 caliber yeah. rimfire brass cartridge, yep. kind of like what we fired today. Yep. I mean, that's
yeah. We still have rimfire rounds today, which mainly it's 22 round. But yeah, a rimfire round can't be reloaded. And it's still around,
but like it was waterproof because they claimed the other ones were waterproof, but the one weren't. He invented, you could throw them in a box, you could transport yeah. them. You just can't take them out of Walmart. Right, Brad?
Yeah. And yes. keep in mind that, I mean, at this time there were a lot of people using fucking cap and ball, like they were yeah. having to load each round individual yeah, in the chambers
muskets
of, I yeah. mean, basically even like the old revolvers you so see
this
in the
this
old
is
West.
Before these the are Civil like, War.
If, yeah. If you shoot your six bullets out of your six gun, it's going to take you a couple minutes to fucking pour powder in, put in the, I right. mean, like this is a massive revolution in what this gun is capable yeah. of, or what any gun is capable of. I mean, the Henry repeating rifle was like a massive step up.
Yeah. There was a yeah, story so, of like a couple of guys holding off a fucking whole bunch of Indians attacking
yeah.
him.
Yeah. That was one of the rifles. First stories yeah. of the success of the repeating rifle that Henry had built. And then there was also some bank robbers that one man had taken down three bank robbers with four shots.
I think you've got that line of men, like Civil War status, like, you know, where they're like shooting, like boom, everybody.
Well, that's
shoots.
Why they had rows, because the first yeah. ones are going down while the other ones are trying to reload.
And then all of a sudden those guys are just walking at you with 17 yeah. rounds.
And that was like, the thing. Pop, I mean, pop, you would have two or three lines
right.
because the first, you would step up and fire.
Gone.
Reload, and then even duck. If you weren't gone, you would now drop to your knee and start reloading. And the second line would step in front of you and fire. And then they would, right. half of them would get shot. And move then the up, survivors yeah. would drop to their knees and reload. Yeah. And then the third line
that
would
come
up.
That sounds not fun. I'm hiding
no,
by the tree.
Fucking like, not fun at all.
Like, I'm Viet Conging these that guys. Was, like,
it, wouldn't have worked with those nah. guns though. That was the most efficient
yeah.
war.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, and one of the other big events was the Battle of the Bulge, where the Indians actually overcame Custer and his troops. Using repeater rifles
that
when
wasn't
the
Battle of the Bulge.
What battle was it?
That's when I put my underwear on in the morning.
No, yeah. Battle of the Bulge. What?
No, Battle of the Bulge was in Belgium in World War II.
Custer's Last Stand.
Yeah. Little Bighorn.
Oh, is that what it is?
Man, well, don't argue with college battle professors.
Of... Yeah.
Oh, man. So anyway, okay. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So Brad has the internet at his disposal. Yeah. Dave is calmly tapping his pen like, yeah, I know I'm right, motherfucker.
Well, I just wanted to make sure because I don't know where I got Battle yeah, of the Bulge.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so
I just...
Custer, sorry, rewind. Custer, and he had like 200 men, right?
Yeah.
Is that right, Dave?
I don't know. I don't know shit about Custer. I just know about World War II.
I still got underwear jokes. I can't focus.
Yes, I mean, no, the Indians held off Custer's men and eventually ended Custer. With the repeating rifle,
because they had
those guys had single shot rifles,
and that was part of the thing is there was a conservative group in charge of army supplies
yep.
that thought that the repeating rifles, whether it was the Henry repeating rifle or the later ones like the, what were the other models, the 1873 and the 1886, like they got better and better, the 1866, the different yeah. models, like the government still wouldn't support it, and the government yeah. still didn't want to buy them in mass because they thought it was
yeah, the 1866 was the first one where the war was going on. This was a good rifle. It's right. better than anything out
but
there.
But even then, the army didn't buy that.
Yeah, man. So they bought the
how
total,
were the Indians getting them? They were just like,
well, this was after the fact.
Them?
Yeah, they were traded.
Because I know they were like
stuff.
$50. They said an yeah. average soldier, and I was confused about that.
$13 a month.
They said, yeah, they would have to like yeah. make payments or like work for a month and a half yeah. or something to
so,
get them.
So what happened was the army actually bought little over 1,700
yes.
of those rifles.
Of right. the Henry rifles.
But actually about 6,000 were used during the war. Which is an insignificant number as opposed to how many men died.
Sure.
But 6,000 of them were used. All of those, that's over 4,000 were bought individually by the guys themselves because they were like, no, we need to have one of these rifles.
Yeah, because yeah. the troops were like, fuck that, living. I'm buying yeah. one of these things.
Yeah, fuck yeah. that. Like, yeah. I'm fucking hammering these guys out. I'm not standing there reloading. Like, but and why wouldn't you?
Right. Neither side of the Civil War trusted the guns.
It wasn't, but wasn't tested, yeah.
Right, it wasn't tested. But then ultimately the Confederate Army is what ordered the 1,700 Henry rifles because there was a quote from the Yankees bought them because one Confederate said that Henry, the guy who designed the gun, was, quote, that damned Yankee who designed a rifle that can be loaded on Sunday and fired all week.
Yep.
Like, because they were, afraid of, because everybody else one shot reload and then someone else can just knock out 17 fucking rounds in a minute. Yeah. Like that's
somewhere was quoted. You could load it, travel around the world and still shoot again. Like the volatility of it, it being stable over travel and vibration. Right.
Well, and it was up to 17 rounds. It was up to, you could load up to 30 rounds.
You could just keep it
66. Yeah. So you could, 30 rounds.
And you could feel confident it was going to fire too, was the other thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Through however long, it could be 4 days later and you traveled a great distance and it's fucking fine.
And it's that classic, like, you look at an old Western and you see someone with a rifle and they've got that rifle that they have to keep, like, you
it's the Red Rider BB gun
lever action, you know,
that's the rifle that we're talking about. It's not like an automatic, it's not like a machine
gun. Things so I had the chance to go to the Winchester Mansion. It's in San Jose, if you haven't went, and we'll talk about the mansion itself later, but they have a display of guns, and it's not part of the house. It's like on these outer buildings, but they are pieces of work.
Oh, they're amazing.
They are art pieces for sure. The barrels are hexagonal. I mean, just the craftsmanship that goes into carving, you know, the pieces of metal that are on these things are amazing.
Yeah.
Just a few years ago, they had barrels that were put out that were labeled one of 1,000.
Right.
And it was the best barrel of 1,000 barrels. And if you find one of these nowadays, it is going for about $100,000.
Yeah, there were some Pawn Star episodes.
Yeah.
Heavily scripted, fake fuckers.
Yeah, but no, they had auctions. I mean, these weapons that are you know, they estimate the value at 7,000 or 7,000, and they go for 14.
I read somewhere just functionality. People even prefer Winchester before 1970, regardless. Like the functionality and performance-wise, before 1970, like the guns were better.
Yep.
So part of it then is Henry, who designed that gun. This is where the Winchester, because right now it still isn't even called Winchester yet. It's still
Henry Hunting Rifle.
So, but even the company is still called New Haven Arms.
Yeah.
But in 1864, Henry sued Winchester for lack of compensation for the gun design that he made. And he did it. And apparently Winchester was in Europe. So he steamed back from Europe, like, with a quickness to get involved in this lawsuit.
He turned that patent over, though. Like, he made it and then handed the patent to them. But then got pissed because, shit.
Well, they probably had some sort of agreement, you know, as far as, like, patent was under. Because he was working for Winchester designing. He was getting paid to design a gun.
Right, right.
So he patented it, and then it was under Winchester, though.
Right. So when the lawsuit goes down, he basically ends up reorganizing the company. He calls it Winchester Repeating Arms, and that's in 1866. And he ends up hiring a new guy named Nelson King to improve the Henry rifle. So he doesn't, like, I'm not even selling your fucking rifle.
They completely modified it.
Well, because
and improved it.
Yeah. There was issues. The caliber was too small. You couldn't shoot big game. And basically, there was reports like people had went, and shot, like rhinos, and it wouldn't penetrate, or no, was it hippos? No, rhinos. And it wouldn't penetrate the skin, the bullet. So that there was issues like that that they wanted to improve upon. Okay. So,
well, they kept the same caliber. It was 44 caliber. That was that model 1866. Mm-hmm. Is that first modified design? Yeah.
Yeah.
But he did. But there were a bunch of flaws. They improved upon it. And again, and this one they call the Yellow Boy because it's got this funky bronze brass alloy.
Well, it was made out of brass. Like the whole metal, the whole trigger mechanism, everything was made out of brass.
But it does look yellow. It's not like the typical looking.
Yeah. It's polished.
Thing. Yeah. And it sells well, but it didn't sell great because, again, when the Civil War was happening, it was still an untested technology. The army wasn't behind it, et cetera. But this is 1866 is when it becomes Winchester Repeating Arms, which it still is today. It's actually the 150th anniversary of the even though the company existed before that, it wasn't called Winchester.
And they've changed over times. It was a company called Olin's bought it, and then they changed it to U.S. Repeating Arms, which that's kind of what it is now, and they're licensed with the Winchester name, is why after 1970 things changed.
Right. Oh, I see.
So
they bought it.
Yeah.
So the big gun, like the one that they make, is the model 1873, yep. Which obviously
that's the gun you want.
Very unoriginally, it came out in 1873.
Well, that's how everything.
If, yeah, that's how they were all
the
yeah,
guns yeah. are that the 1911 handgun yeah. was made in 1911. Yeah, yeah they're everything is made by the 30-06 was made in 1930. That's the round. So, you know, everything is made by or labeled by date for whatever reason. That's how guns have done.
Being
it, so.
A computer repair guy, I fucking support the logic of yeah, that.
Because with Windows, Christ. It's like, how do you count to 10 I'm sorry, according to Bill Gates?
Yeah. Skipping numbers just fucking makes no sense. I don't, maybe it makes sense on their side, but for the normal person or yeah. the guy that's got to find the fucking part, model numbers yeah. are retarded.
Yeah.
yeah.
So the Model 1873 is what they call the gun that won the West. It was made from 1873 to 1919. A total of 720,000 units were sold. And again, that isn't even where they made their money. They made their money because at the time, very few, it wasn't like if you go to a gun store right now and I can pick between 15 different ammo manufacturers. Yeah. If you were buying this gun, you were buying Winchester ammunition made right. at a Winchester plant. And that was so for every person who bought a gun, they sold thousands of yeah, rounds. And this, that was how they made their
and
money.
And at this point, at the 1873 was when they actually created the centerfire round.
Yes.
And that's what we still use today. Like it is the
meaning it has a primer in the middle,
has a primer in the center. The rim fires are kind of a solid back.
Yeah.
So yeah, they created a center fire round, which is what we use today.
Please tell your story about ammo going off at one.
Yeah. So my fiance wasn't my fiance at the time, but our buddy, Steve, his sister, went to Walmart, bought a box of 9mm Winchester ammo. And this is granted, this is nowadays,
right.
Winchester ammo is not as good. I don't even buy it. But she bought a box of 50 rounds of 9mm. Maybe she bought a couple boxes or whatever, walks out into the parking lot with the bag that she just purchased. And a round went off in the box in the bag.
What the fuck did she do? That's so scary. What did she do?
Like nothing. Like it can happen.
If there's no barrel around it and there's nothing behind it, like I watched the Mythbusters where they tried to
blow it up. There's faulty primers.
Well, they tried to like hold it with a lighter. Like they were trying to prove that you could hold a bullet and then put a lighter under the back of it and you could shoot somebody.
Yeah, there's no pressure. Yeah, there's no pressure. That's impossible.
It did penetrate the ballistic gel, but at a really close distance and you'd burn the fuck out of your hand.
Yeah.
You'd have to hold it with like needle nose pliers and a lighter. And
you have to hold it really solid.
And don't run. Yeah, like, you'd have to be like 2 feet away. I mean,
it's significantly less dangerous than putting it in a gun and firing it, but it's still a fucking round.
Yeah, because the barrel is what the gas is behind the bullets there. The gas is behind it.
Was she in the car?
No. She was walking back to the car.
Pow, like a firecracker.
Yep.
Bam.
Shot. And
I wonder how often that's happened. How rare that is.
It is rare. I mean, I would say it's rare. I have a lot of ammo and I've never had any go off. I load my own ammo.
Right.
I've never had a primer go off or anything like that. So
that's fucking crazy.
It happens though. I mean, there could have been some manufacturing flaw. I mean, think if you had it in your house or had it loaded, and that's why you never point a gun at anybody, no matter what, because you didn't pull the trigger and
go off. Yeah.
It went off.
Yeah, that's
so, I mean,
scary.
It's not necessarily the gun. There's a bullet, a bullet flaw also. So things are dangerous.
Yeah. That's fucking sketchy.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a good thing.
I've never had it. Bigger. No, it was a 9mm.
Oh, it was a 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Damn. So I don't know. I've never had it happen, but it can happen, I guess, apparently. So.
So the 1873, the model 1873 is the classic thing, and they call it the gun that won the West because it was affordable and it's 1873. This is the time of the Western. Like if you see any of these classic Western things, this is the gun that people were taking to the frontier. This is the gun that people who were like trying to get to the West Coast were taking caravans.
What happened was with that term, this is in 1873. In the early 1900s, like 1918 or 1919, somewhere around there, maybe it's 1920, they coined that term as a marketing ploy because technically everybody from the West used it. There's one picture that's real of Billy the Kid with an 1873.
Right.
There's a picture, a Buffalo Bill was known to carry that rifle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like these famous people from the West, everybody used that specific rifle.
And they were badass rifles. And I mean, yeah, like you said, one of the reasons that Custer lost the battle is because the Indians had, the Lakotas had Henry rifles, 1866s and 1873s. And when you're fighting a force of a bunch of people with single shot rifles,
yeah,
and you've got these rifles, you're going to fucking win.
And they weren't standing in a motherfucking line. They're riding on a horse being ninjas and shit, because they were used to shooting an arrow from a fucking moving horse. Yeah. And now they have a gun with a bunch of bullets. I wonder where they were getting ammo. They were just, after they whooped your ass, they took your guns and ammo. Unlike a movie where they leave the gun on the ground. It always makes me mad.
Well, and the difference in the models from 1866 to 1873 was the 1866 was a good gun. The issue was the magazine was exposed, so the bullets could get dirty inside, things could get mucked up. And the other thing is, after you fired off 30 rounds, the barrel gets quite hot.
Right.
So the adjustments they made was they encased the magazine and created a side-loading mechanism where you could push the bullet through the side, and they put on a wood stock. A four handle. So those things were modifications that made that 1873 so popular and just became the grounds for.
Oh, so what, prior to the barrel was just metal.
It was just a metal barrel. Ooh. You're holding the bottom of it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've ever shot guns and you go out and you fire two rounds and fill the barrel, it starts getting warm. You know, like those things get hot. They smoke. So they actually, Winchester was the one who, alongside of his machinists and everybody else who were involved in creating these guns, who was the guy you said he hired was the last one in 1866?
King, Nelson King.
King. I think he was the one that actually came in and developed the 73.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a huge, huge, huge jump in what a gun looks like and still how a gun is made today.
Today, yeah. It's still, I mean, you look at guns in this era, it's like the model 1873 is very similar to how rifles are today. Yeah. If you look at
and
a
they still
bit,
make Henry rifles
exactly,
today.
Exactly. The Colt 1911 handgun is still one of the most popular handguns.
I think because you don't reinvent the wheel. Like, once you find the design for that type of technology, you're going to use
it. And they have reinvented the wheel. Like, there's guns out there that are just crazy. I mean, you have guns that the front bends and they shoot around corners with, you know, what I mean, there is new technology and there's all kinds of crazy things that have gone on. You know, you go from a pump shotgun to a semi-automatic shotgun, you know, like
we come out with fucking like laser guns or photon guns.
But
the way
that a rifle looks, I mean, one of those examples of going off the beaten path is like an AR-15, the platform. Right. It's the same as any other rifle, but the way you clean it, the way it shoots is a little bit different.
Right.
And that's just a redesigned rifle. You know what I mean?
Right.
But a classic rifle, all are based on this same development.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing changed on them hardly.
And then from what I read, there was one final bit of adjustments that were made to the overall design, which was the model 1886.
Yeah.
Which was some fine points that were done by John Browning, which apparently are what perfected the idea of how a rifle is supposed to work.
Yes.
So the 1886, when John Browning gets involved, who of course then creates Browning, you know, its own brand.
Who is famous in his own right for a lot of things that he did.
So I think Winchester, the man was basically kind of like Jobs.
Yeah, he was a businessman.
He was a Bill Gates. He was just looking at all of his employees and he was like, I think this guy needs to design the gun and I'm going to buy this company out and then I'm going to do this. And it's like, I mean, you look at a video game platform, it's like Xbox loses money selling the Xbox One, but they make all their money selling video games.
Yeah,
it's like Winchester, it doesn't matter how much money I'm making on the guns. It matters how much.
If he sold
720,000 1886s,
you have to keep buying ammo.
Yeah. And he was the only one making the ammo making the ammo.
Surprised someone didn't knock that off. Like, just buy some bullets, make it.
Well,
they did.
Smith and Wesson started making around. That's the thing. Like, you buy a 9mm and they're specific because somebody made a 9mm bullet that size. It is now stuck with that label.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you call, I mean, there's so many different rounds out there, and they're all labeled with whoever came up with them.
Right.
Even though it's the same bullet.
The 40 caliber is always called the Smith & Wesson.
Smith & Wesson 40 caliber, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have it's just that's what it shoots.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
I have a side question. How are you doing on that King Cobra over there? Because I'll be honest, I am I'm pretty fuzzy over here.
I can see it in I'm your like
half
eyes.
Do you drink half of it or you drink it all?
I might have like a fourth of it left, but that's my second King Cobra. What you guys don't realize is like this may have taken a week for you, but it's been fucking 2 hours for me. I'm a couple whiskeys in and two of these King Cobras are fucking legit. Yeah, like,
keep in mind, Chris listeners, Lewis? That I drank one drink of a King Cobra on Tuesday and now it's Friday.
I posted that we did it. We got some comments. Casey Horak said, King Cobra is the ultimate beer. Naysayers be damned.
There we go. We have an agreement. And he hasn't even heard the podcast.
I'm so excited I get to say this. Monche Torres.
Monche 89.
King Cobra. That's Brent's drink of choice, I'm sure. That's not my drink of choice. I haven't had that shit since I was like 15.
So that's the shit when you tell somebody that you play Hey Mister to go
that
get
was
your
my
beer,
first Hey Mister.
And they walk out with King Cobra.
40s.
Like, fuck. Yeah.
We didn't know any better. Damn.
Yeah, it didn't really matter.
Monche.
So in 1880, Oliver Fisher Winchester dies.
Yeah.
It's not like I did a fucking exhaustive search, but I couldn't find anything that said how he died. Every site I read just said
severe.
Like everything just said he died.
A round went off.
Like he just died.
He
like
was nothing. Walking out of Walmart and a round went off and shot him in the leg and he bled to death.
Nobody said how he died, but
he
died.
No, it was severe anal trauma.
Okay. That's what I thought. That was my immediate suspicion. I'm glad you backed that up. So when he dies, William Wirt Winchester, his son, who has up until now been the treasurer of the company, inherits half the company. I'm not
only
sure
who gets
the other half, but he inherits half the company. He becomes the CEO and the head
probably stockholders,
of the company.
Just like probably that 51-50 thing, yeah.
Yeah, so he owns half the company.
That doesn't add up for the record.
That's crazy.
51-49, yeah.
Yeah.
51-50 is crazy.
But so his dad dies in 1880.
I'm fuzzy.
And then William Wirt Winchester dies a year later in March of 1881 from tuberculosis.
Yes.
So, you know, Winchester is dead. Long live Winchester. And then the second Winchester takes over and he dies. Now, the thing is, this Winchester Jr., the William Wirt Winchester.
That's a lot of W's.
Winchester Jr.
That was so many W's.
Can we call him Jr.?
Yeah, we can call him Jr. So when Jr. is the one who marries Sarah. Sarah Lockwood Pardee, who becomes Sarah Winchester, who is the one who creates the mystery house. I always thought that the main Winchester, Oliver Winchester, was the one with the wife who did that, but no, he had died.
Oh, see, I didn't catch that either.
No, yeah, the son's wife. Yeah, the son's wife is the one who did that.
Yeah.
So, they had a daughter, William and Sarah, and they named her Annie Pardee Winchester. And she was born in 1866 and she dies 9 days later from marasmus. And I was like, oh, that was probably a big thing that was happening back in the Old West.
Yeah.
So let me look up what marasmus is.
Yeah, I heard of that.
And it's a type of extreme starvation and lack of proteins, carbohydrates, and lipids. Mm-hmm. And when you go
food?
Look up,
fuck, that's
when
everything.
You look up breast marasmus, milk? You see pictures of like starving, pot-bellied, like third world babies.
So why don't they call it starvation? Why do they call it marasmus?
I have no idea.
That's just
why they call it marasmus.
You said carbohydrates, proteins, and lipids, which is fat. That's like food.
Yes, yeah.
That was food.
Yeah. The bigger question to me is
she wasn't breastfeeding the baby.
Right. The bigger question to me isn't why didn't they call this starvation. The question to me is, how did one of the richest families in New England have a baby who fucking dies of starvation?
Yeah. She's like, building stairs.
What is
man.
Happening? No, she that wasn't that
Not
was
yet.
Years before any of that stuff had
well,
gone
she was
down.
Fucking crazy.
This was in 1866.
Right.
So that was a good while before anything. I remixed it right there.
I wasn't going to point it out because everything's delayed right now for me. I thought everything could be me at this point right now. It could be fuzziness. I can't call you.
You're that bad.
I did think
I'm pretty toasted right now.
He is pretty toasty. You can't see it in his eyes. Look at him.
Yeah, I could go to
wondering sleep
how,
right now.
That's not good.
I just looked at the clock. I was like, 39 minutes. We got to fucking do drywall and shit.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
enjoy this.
Fun.
So Sarah Winchester is a very interesting character, right? So she comes up at this point She, as soon as her husband dies, instantly inherits 50% of Winchester. She immediately inherits $20 million, which is the fortune that she gets. And she's making $1,000 a day from what she owns from Winchester, which is the equivalent of $23,000 a day, according to modern day. So she's making 23 grand a day doing nothing.
Day.
Plus she's got 20 mil in the bank, which 20 mil in the bank would have been
ridiculous. You know,
multiply that as well. So she instantly became ridiculous. One of the wealthiest women on earth.
How pissed were the mustache top hat guys right now? Oh, fucking
yeah,
check.
Dude. Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah, dude.
Crazy. The bitch. Woman. Yeah.
Fucking, that wasn't even like the guy. It was the son who died right away.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, this bitch is going to get everything.
This is the crazy thing, though. Like, he died of whatever.
Tuberculosis.
And then the baby died right
after
that. Starviosis. Like,
Starviosis.
I'm wondering, like, did he die of tuberculosis or did she kill him? Like,
I have no idea.
This bitch was crazy. Like, no, she was off her rocker.
I looked into her a bit because I wanted to know as much as I could about her. So she apparently was considered by all circles a prodigy with literature and music. Like, she, by the age of 12, she was fluent in Latin, French, Spanish, and Italian.
It's called Asperger's.
They called her the Belle of New Haven because she was apparently really attractive and incredibly smart. Ooh. And musically gifted.
She could count toothpicks if you throw them on the ground.
Yeah, she was one of the first women ever to attend Yale. At the time, they called it Yale's Young Ladies Collegiate Institute. So she went to Yale, which was in New Haven. She was involved with a woman named Delia Bacon, who came up with all these crazy theories about Shakespeare not actually writing Shakespeare based on like deep linguistic analysis and looking at word choice and all this stuff. So she was like this legit, like really intelligent person, right? And she
was. It's a fine line.
It is a fine line. And so apparently she was into encryption and code breaking because that kind of is what you got into at that level of analysis with Shakespearean writing. So she starts to get into all this stuff. And then she also starts to get into what they call theosophy, which is a type of, not do it justice, but it's a type of philosophy or belief. It's like Kabbalistic and you
two words I've never knew. It's Kabbalistic and theosophy.
Yeah.
Intrigued right now.
You look at the mystical and occult practices to get in touch with the divine. So it's like the idea of seances or contacting outside spirits to understand God better and to get in touch, like the universe is all one thing. It's like,
I stepped in, I stepped out. I was in because I like the word, but no.
And there's a woman named Helena Blavatsky, who they think was directly responsible for some of the Nazi ideas that like they took from her, from this whole belief. So she was into some wacky kind of occultish kind of things, definitely in her background. And those are the things that I could find that I was like down with and could confirm and so forth. But then a lot of this stuff comes out. People think that she got involved in a bunch of seances in Boston. And this is where the legend sort of takes over, is that she got involved in seances in Boston. I forget the name of the psychic that supposedly she worked with. But apparently these seances are what convinced her that she needed to move out to the West Coast, because the myth around her is that she believed that the spirits of all the people that were killed by Winchester rifles,
she was being haunted by them.
Her, and that there was a curse on the family, and it's why her father-in-law died, why her husband died, why their baby died, even though she probably wasn't feeding it.
I don't think she knew. Like, she's like, oh, we have to feed babies?
Oh, really?
Like,
this is crazy. I thought you just had to water them and put them in the sun. Yeah. Like, I've been doing that every day.
You have to bury their feet in the dirt if you want that to work.
It's a different thing, Sarah.
Oh, man.
But so after the death, she traveled, like it's also known, confirmed. She went to Europe for 3 years, but no one knows where she went. I turned into Popeye.
You didn't even drink King Cobra.
No, I know. But she, you know, this is where a lot of the legend is born. They think that she went and studied ancient artifacts and Masonic rites in France and all this different stuff. But she went to Europe for 3 years with some baller money. And then when she came back, she ended up buying an 8-room farmhouse on 100 162 acres in 1884 in what is now San Jose. And this is the where she wants to build her mansion and wants to stay. And this is still the location right now. If you go to San Jose and go to the Winchester Mystery House, this is the thing. And she also moved there, I would add. Whether that ghost thing is true or not, I find conflicting reports, but her families, the Pardee family, had all moved out there. And again, it ties into her background in really interesting ways, like weird shit going on in her background.
In the house, she does have a seance room.
A seance room, right, exactly. Well,
in season two, ghost hunters went there and they were not able to find anything.
There was no
just for the record, yeah.
Well, they were only haunting her, not her house. Yeah. But so... her maiden name was Pardee, but one of her relatives, a guy named Enoch Pardee, was the mayor of Oakland and a huge California politician in the 1870s. That guy's son became the governor of California, and both of the Pardees were recorded members of the Bohemian Club, which is kind of an Illuminati weird offshoot. So she's got like weird occultic family that are in the Bohemian Club, which is in this area around San Jose. So she's got some weird connections and some weird stuff. But then the idea is, the myth behind it and the house is that once she got to this house, she never slept in the same bedroom twice. And if she did, she had it redone before she slept in it.
I was going to say, that sounds impossible on the timeline, because I read that too, that she never slept in the same room.
But she wouldn't sleep in the same room in the same configuration. So if she slept back in the same room, it would have a new carpet and different furniture and repainted the walls because she wanted to confuse the spirits.
And that's how you spend $23,000 a day. Because I was like, how can you spend $23,000 a day?
So she hires 20 carpenters to continually build on this mansion. And again, the myth is that she was afraid of the spirits. I even read, and I don't know, you've been there, Brad. I read that there was only one working toilet in the entire place and all the other bathrooms were fake.
That's what I read too. Yeah.
So,
to confuse the spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, until a spirit shits in the toilet. Joke's on you.
Yeah. Now the spirits are shitting on the floor.
There's turds in 27 toilets.
We did. Yeah, man. We did like...
There's more ghost turds in toilet 7. Yeah.
So we did two tours there. They have a regular house tour, and then they have the behind the scenes tour where you go into like the boiler room and like all the places that aren't just like normal rooms. And it's not, they make it out where it's like scary and this and that. Like it's weird. Like it is weird. Like it's what you expect, like to go into this house where they never stopped building. The staircases just go
doors
to a
that
wall.
Go nowhere.
Yeah, like you're on the third floor and the door just opens up outside.
And then
like
if you were to windows walk through to it, another bedroom.
Yeah, windows to bedrooms. Like there's 13, like 13 is a big number. Like 13 candles in the chandelier, 13 window panes, 13
there's 13
doors
holes in the sink drain, I read. Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a coincidence, because some of the chandeliers that they had, they can see evidence that it held 12 and
they
she had it modified to be 13.
It was just duct tape. It was just crudely duct taped the candle.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, things were very weird. She had some sort of weird disease where it was hard for her to lift her legs.
Yes.
And so like the stairways were really narrow. Like for me, I mean, I'm a larger guy. Like I'm not like huge, but I mean, I'm wide.
Right.
And I had to literally turn sideways to walk up these hallways, and you walk up these stairs and they're only about 6 inches tall, maybe 4 inches tall.
She couldn't lift her leg.
Yeah. Right. It was like these tiny, like weird steps, like that you walk up and there was a bunch of them, like where normally you'd have 20 steps to go somewhere. You had 40 and they're like multiple, like it was less kind of like we talked about in the pyramids, how if you went around the pyramid, you can make it where it wasn't as steep. This was kind of the thing. So like you would go up these stairs and they're like, you've went up an equivalent to two floors, but it really didn't feel like you were walking anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. Like there was just a lot of weird things. The house did have weird vibes. Like it was just a creepy place. Yeah.
So at its height, when it was its largest, it was not bedrooms, but rooms in general. It was supposedly at its height, it was 500 rooms.
What? I didn't read that.
And it was 7 stories tall. But in the earthquake of 1906, which like ravaged San Francisco, most of the upper floors collapsed and a ton of the side wings that were built quickly collapsed. And it was kind of left with this core building in the middle. She actually got trapped in one of the rooms and couldn't get out during the earthquake. And it took a while. But then after the earthquake, she said
it was
not
the
to
one
build.
With a working bathroom.
That's right.
She lucked out. It was built on a floating foundation too, so I guess the whole thing should have come down. But luckily, that type of foundation they were on it withstood the earthquake.
Yeah. But so now it's roughly 160 rooms with 40 bedrooms, two ballrooms. I guess one is completed and one's unfinished. 47 fireplaces, 10,000 panes of glass, 17 chimneys, even though there's evidence that there might be two other chimneys that are built over, like in the
middle of
the
building. Yeah, there's a weird, yeah.
Two basements, three elevators, and even the elevator at the time was just cutting edge. Like, are you kidding me? There's an elevator.
They did something about a horizontal lift. Did you see that? Like the gear thing that lifts the elevator, it goes horizontally opposed to vertically because it's more efficient, and she spared no expense. Like all the stained glass is Tiffany's. She has a storage room with like
and it's not just that the stained glass was Tiffany. Fucking Tiffany
did
like the guy, he himself designed and laid out the glass.
Yeah, with 13
her.
Colors, well, it's all kinds of crazy.
It's crazy still to this day. If you only do the one tour and see the house, like there's all kinds of crazy shit you can see on the house. But then there's like the fucking storage area where windows and panes and
from
fucking
Tiffany's.
Doors are stored because they've put them in, taken them out, like all this shit.
And I read that they call it the $25,000 storage area because at the time when she was alive, there was $25,000 worth of glass and doors in this
thing. It is fucking
Tiffany stained glass.
It's insane. Like there's just panels and panels and panels, and it's millions of dollars. Like it is literally.
Yeah, they said they couldn't even put a number today.
No. Yeah,
because it's hard to say.
It's ridiculous.
Like, what is the Winchester door Tiffany custom glass and
everything? Because not only is it Tiffany and it's custom.
Now it's got this
link to the Winchester.
You would have to auction it off and there's just no
telling.
It'd be insane. You can't.
And I've never been there. I've always wanted to be there. But some of the stuff that I read online, some of the 47 chimneys have an overhead ceiling. There are skylights in some rooms that are covered by roofs, and there are other skylights that are covered by skylights.
Yeah.
Very efficient use of skylights.
Santa Claus vacations there. Yeah.
There's one place where the skylight is built into the floor, because at one point it probably wasn't a floor.
It was the roof.
There are tiny doors that lead into large spaces, large doors that lead into very small places. One part of the house is a second story door that opens outward on a sheer drop to the ground. It's just a door the outside of the place.
Sounds like a Cat in the Hat book.
That's there.
Yeah. All the pillars are upside down. Like all the pillars that support weight are carved, but they're upside down in the house for no apparent reason. And then the numbers 7, 11, and primarily 13 are all throughout the house. They're in the windows. They're everywhere. I've read a lot of articles as I was looking into her that said that they think it's a myth that she thought there were spirits chasing her. They think that's apocryphal and it wasn't really true, but they still don't really address, well, then what the fuck was she doing?
Yeah.
Like, why did she build house? Why was there constant, the entire 38 years
she lived there? 7 days a week,
24 hours a day,
365 days
for 38 years.
38 years.
So whether there were spirits chasing her or not, that's some weird shit. Yeah. And she did always sleep in a different room there. I even read an account that said that when she died and they cleared all the furniture out, it took 8 trucks a day for 6 days to clear the house out.
Yeah.
Because there was so much shit in the house.
I'm trying to find it, but I actually read that was a myth that they never stopped for 38 years, that she, on several occasions, dismissed workers for months at a time. And she was quoted to say, so that I can rest or something like that. Mm. But that is commonly thought that they did it for 30 years nonstop, but she did give them several breaks.
But even still, I think it was still over 30 years.
I think bad stuff happened in that time and she started up again. Like it was like she would stop and then shit would happen.
There's a spirit turd in the bathroom.
Yeah. Spirit turd. It said, says that she routinely dismissed workers for months at a time. Says to take such rest as I might is her quote, which flies in the face of claims the mystery house was nonstop. So.
And she... it's said that she always wore a dark veil everywhere around, like
it's
after her husband died.
She sounds like
it was
a ghost.
A funeral. Yeah. She apparently, from what I read, she paid a little bit over twice the going rate for all construction that was done at her house. So if a person was normally making like just under $1.50 a day for construction, she was paying just over $3 a day for them.
That's how you keep people from going, fuck this. Like,
exactly. That's how you keep people from going, man, that crazy bitch at that house.
Keeping them happy. Like, she's crazy, but she's paying me money.
She's giving me food. I got a place to live and I'm making twice as much money. I'll build a weird ass staircase for you.
You want that upside down? Sure.
It's weird. Like the motivational thing. If you feel like nothing's being accomplished, whether you're being paid a good wage or not, if I pay you $20 an hour to take shit off this pallet, put it on that pallet, wrap it up when you're done, cut it, restack the shit on this pallet and wrap it. When you're done, cut it back open and just do it all fucking day. But you're making $20, $30 an hour. There's a thing that weighs on you mentally where you're like, fuck this. I'm not doing anything. I'm digging holes and filling them. So you have to like step up the fucking wage to keep people doing that. Because it doesn't matter how much money you're making. If you're like, this is worthless. I'm not doing anything.
Right. Right.
Yeah, there's like a sense of accomplishment that comes into factor.
So when your boss comes in and says, so, you know that skylight you installed last time?
Take it out.
What I'd like to do is put a ceiling right above
Yeah, if you own a business and your customers are doing that to you, you're like, fuck you.
Even if you're getting paid, the fact of doing it over is discouraging because you already did it.
Well, that's why the grave diggers, you know, at cemeteries, they dig a hole, fill the hole, dig the hole. Hey, we got, why not fuck the bodies? Got to get something out of this.
It's a solid point. A solid argument.
That was not where I thought that was going. I was like, why don't we bury two in this hole? I was like, I was waiting for some sort of logic.
I'm definitely writing
down. That was not that.
Five grave diggers.
But yeah, one account that I read was that she would hold seances most nights from midnight till 2. She would ring a bell at midnight to indicate she was starting the seance. She would ring the bell at the end to indicate she was done with the seance. And she was only doing it to indicate to the spirits that she was doing it, because part of the seance was to give the spirits a way to, I don't know, alleviate themselves or express their concerns.
I hope she used a spirit bell, because spirits don't hear regular bells.
Well, she probably did. I'm sure she invested wisely in a spirit bell.
She knows more than we do.
Okay. Yeah, she knew a lot.
She's got a lot more crazy than we
have. She got a whole lot more crazy
than we have. That's debatable.
Yeah.
And then I read one website. I was trying to track this cat. I couldn't really follow him. He went into all these details about Sarah, like factual stuff, all this stuff about her, and then like talked all this shit about the fact that the spirits weren't after her and that wasn't what she believed, and then goes into this crazy thing he calls the Winchester algorithm, and he talks about this cipher code that Sarah Winchester left in the house for people to crack, and there's all these weird words on stained glass windows that tie to Shakespeare texts that have something to do with her.
No, said she was into code breaking.
Like, there's weird. There is weird shit. Yeah. There's weird quotes and stuff that are up. Like,
the problem with that kind of thing is when someone's fucking crazy, there might be a code, but it might be like, be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Right. Exactly. And you're like, exactly. Fuck. Exactly. Yeah. So his whole thing was like, he acknowledges, she built a fucking crazy ass house, but he says the whole thing is about something called the Winchester algorithm, and that she had something she was trying to accomplish and it had nothing to do with spirits, and that it was a code, to which case I still say she was fucking batshit crazy.
She's
and building
crazy.
A super code into her house.
I have a special place in my heart for her. She just had rituals and obligations. That's my new quote. Someone called me out on
hashtagged
that.
You,
someone hashtagged me rituals and obligations, which is like code for OCD. It's the nice way of saying you're fucking crazy.
I think
it's
I've
the reason I'm going to finish this fucking King Cobra. Right
by
here.
The way, I do realize that your pre-show ritual now includes a loud clink of the glass and bottle into the microphone.
Well, it's because I've challenged him with taking it out.
Yeah, but I just don't think he's ever going to be able to stop doing that.
Maybe I can clink all the way through Brad deleting the digital track is what my thought is, you know?
Yeah, you're going to...
He'll find another way.
Because at first it was just a very casual little soft clink, you know, but now he has to clink in front of the microphone to chase the spirits
away. Echoes through eternity. I will do it.
Rituals and obligations.
So I've never been to the Winchester. So you always see it, and it's just the Winchester Mystery House, and it doesn't seem all that appealing. It's like the fucking largest ball of yarn or something. Like, who gives a shit? But
we forgot that she loves redwood and prefers everything to be built of redwood, doesn't like the way redwood looks. Now, so faux painted over it with 20,000 gallons of paint.
That and it's very interesting because when you go to the house, they tell you that fact,
right?
That everything is redwood, but everything has been faux painted. That shit is fucking detailed.
They painted wood grain over wood grain.
Yes.
Because she didn't like the looks of the wood grain.
Yeah. It is fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like, they're, and that's the thing. Like, the house isn't necessarily creepy. Like, yeah, there's weird shit. Like,
do you know how much the house sold for after she died? $130,000.
Yeah,
because it was considered useless.
Yeah,
it's like so somebody fucking weird. They're like, no one can live in this. And then someone got smart and said, nah, tourist.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that some of the websites that are critiquing this say. They say that she didn't think all that spirit stuff. And they argue that that is something that the people who own the house currently are trying to make everyone believe.
Yeah.
Because then it's a creepy
story. They have Halloween sessions.
And you show
and
up
like
and all that stuff. So,
it's actually now owned by Winchester. Again,
they is it?
Yeah, they got it again in the end. I don't remember where it's at here.
Yeah, and so, they stopped making money off firearms years ago. Now it's just the souvenir shop in there.
Yeah, currently it's owned by Winchester Investments LLC, a privately
whatever
held
that
company.
Is,
right.
That could be anybody.
Oh, yeah, it could be anybody.
It says Brown.
So, but yeah, so the anyway, a lot of people argue that that story of her ghosts and everything chasing her or something that they try to you know, promulgate at the shop. So you're interested and you want to go and drop tourist money, et cetera. But even if that's not the case, you just have to wonder what the fuck was she up to? And it's still a weird ass house. That's definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, this is still,
I think it's definitely better with the seance story.
It's definitely better with the seance story.
Sure.
But and even I mean, most of the stuff that I read indicates that that is the case. I mean, everything that I read, her background, the fact that her fucking relatives were occultists, that she went to all these, you know, she was a theosophist. All these different things indicate that she probably did believe in spirits and she probably was. I mean, that was a big thing in upper class, oddly enough, in upper class society in the late 1800s. Like this whole spiritualism and seances, like that was a big thing. That was what vaudeville acts were. That was what, I mean, people, I mean, there were seances in the White House. There were, I mean, this was a weird upper class thing and it completely fits that she would be doing this. And even the background of her that I read, it completely fits. So
what's the other word you taught me? Theosophist. And what was the other one?
I don't remember.
Damn you. I'll find it.
Bangladesh.
It wasn't Bangladesh.
Bangladeshi. Yeah.
And we got a Singapore fan that, like, this guy, he is all about us.
That's good.
But he in broken English told me about Singapore, like conspiracies and Bush and Golden Mountains. And then he has lots of pictures of rifles and cigars and Lamborghinis on his fucking Instagram. I was like, damn, we can hang out with this fool, but he's for real. Like,
yeah, he's legit. Yeah,
you know who you are. There's your shout out. I can't think of his Instagram name, but he made me a little bit nervous. Yeah.
Brent gets scared of everything, even scary movies.
He does. Even chupacabras.
So
I don't know. What's your final? Was she afraid of spirits? Was she just building a weird ass house? Did she have a secret algorithm?
I don't know. There's so many things out there. Like, I just know I've been to the house, and if you have a chance to go, it's not that expensive. Like, just go tour it. It's cool if you're going to be in the San Francisco area.
Yeah,
somewhere in San Francisco. You know, there's a lot of things to do in San Francisco. You can go tour Alcatraz and go do that, and you know, all that good stuff. So. Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
I thought about trying to go before we did this.
Yeah,
yeah, you were
asked
talking
me,
about
like,
that.
Can I make a vacation out of it? And I was like, yeah, you can. There's all kinds of shit to do.
Yeah.
I actually found Gordon Birch, the restaurant. No, it's like a little microbrewery, kind of like BJ's or something, you know? Right. Man, that place is fucking good. Like, the food there was incredible.
No, that place is legit.
Yeah. They had like Kobe beef hamburgers. Did you have those, Dave? I had a Kobe beef bacon cheeseburger.
What is Kobe beef? That's where they like give
it's
it massage beer and
cows.
It.
Yeah. Like
it's weird
Japanese. yeah. I always think of fucking Kobe, like the basketball
Kobe
player.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm eating him in the hamburger.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Put the burger on that dick.
So I don't know. I think it's a really fucking trippy family. Very interesting. The original Winchester was a business genius.
Level-headed businessman. He was a genius.
And, I mean, again, like for the first
and his son married
15,
a fucking wackadoo.
15 years of the company, it wasn't all that profitable.
No, it wasn't.
But he stuck by his product. And at the end, by the time the 1866 and the 1873 came out, he just made, I mean, 720,000 of those things sold.
They finally had, like, there was some point they declared bankruptcy and they closed the New Haven manufacturing factory that was open for 150 years.
Yeah.
That's sad. They tried to take on Coleman camping equipment and make a bunch of camping stuff for a little while. It's called Trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
But Coleman apparently has been around since 1900.
Yeah.
They tried to sell, they'd be like a Montgomery Ward's. They partnered with a hardware store, kind of like an Ace type thing. And they tried to sell refrigerators and shit that were Winchester
for a while. Oh, really?
Yeah, they dabbled in a bunch of stuff.
I wonder, I wonder what that stuff goes for. Like if you could find
like pieces, a Winchester refrigerator.
Yeah, an ice chest that's Winchester. Like that, man, like that. Those are probably really rare.
They probably are. And I'm sure gun collectors are just fucking all over.
Yeah, I'd like to have it. I have a gun bathroom, like put trinkets in. Like,
since I'm too drunk for sponsors, I'm going to Google Winchester fridge and find this for you.
I'm not doing sponsors. You're doing sponsors.
Oh, man. That's
you can get through it.
Rituals and obligations.
Oh, you do got a pyramid. He's got a pyramid going on over there.
I did build a pyramid.
Yeah. Pyramid. Go, sponsor time.
Hit the sponsors.
I don't see any Winchester fridges on here.
That's going to be rough.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, it'll be hard to find.
There's cool stuff on
it. It's a conspiracy.
Sponsors?
Conspiracy. Thanks, El Yucateco.
This is going to be good.
This is going to be great.
He's like one of the old hobo little statues that like my grandpa used to have, you know.
Why do I got to do this when there's a perfectly good penguin over there? Somebody tell the penguin to do it. So, yeah, thanks, El Yucateco, for making a substantially flavored hot sauce. It can't be beat. We actually got invited to the Long Beach Hot Sauce Convention, and I said, nay, why would I do that? There's only one hot sauce in my life. What am I going there for?
Right.
You know what I mean? So
actually, Brent was afraid he might find another one, and so he just, because he's OCD.
No, yeah, I can't be changing my game.
No, he won't change his game. Yeah. There's no,
the game has been set.
There's no real reason
hot
to
sauce
go.
Is on lockdown. Yeah. Check next. Yeah. These are the shoes I wear. This is the hot sauce
that's
I drink.
That's very true.
Yeah. And this is my ritual before recording.
Same hat, same shirt. Yep. It has to be a certain shirt.
No, yes. I do.
The fight over printing shirts was ridiculous because Brent has a specific shirt that he wears.
That isn't even the shirt, though. I still couldn't get what I needed.
I know, but
I'm still not happy with
and
that.
And I don't like those shirts. So I just, and we fought over it, and
well, we didn't even get the ones I want.
No.
So yeah, no, I have preferences.
They're just
for
shirts,
sure.
Man.
I'm going to change the quote to preferences, rituals, and obligations.
So who prints our shirts?
Dark Side Graphics. Thanks, Dark Side Graphics, for printing all of our shirts, koozies, and all of our goods for us. And big ass decals. If you want a big ass decal, contact us through social networking.
Speaking of decals,
I don't know what's that.
PrintDirtCheap.com.
PrintDirtCheap.com. Use code SOFAKING to save 10%, as you can at Starbucks and all of our other sponsors. If you try that shit at McDonald's, they will say no because it doesn't work there because they're not sponsoring us. Also, thank you, Digital Creations, for coffee mugs, keychains, mouse pads, and all that good stuff. And thank you, Salt 7 Float. I floated last week, and I feel rejuvenated. I got out of the tank and just ran around the block. That didn't happen. I was super chill and cool. Yeah, I was just relaxed.
It's too fucking hot to run around in.
And you always want to go float after.
Yeah, I got after jiu-jitsu, at Dan Kim Ryu Jiu-Jitsu in Bakersfield.
The legend.
The legend, the man.
Is he the myth? No, he's not.
Take for granted that he's sitting right there on the mat.
Yep.
A lot of people would be like, oh, shit, autograph. Me?
You could walk up behind him and pull his hair and drag him across the mat and see what happens.
Fuck that. I'll tell you what happens. Get your ass
I bet you if you walked up behind him, like tried to sneak up on him, grabbed him by the hair and like drug him backwards, he would probably roll over and armbar you.
Fuck yeah. You better have some hot sauce. Because
if your arm's out, he is the Arm Hunter. You can go to armhunter.com. He has a gi, Arm Hunter Gis. You could check that out. And he's giving away free videos. Was he still giving away the videos?
Yeah, they come with the gi.
Yeah, they come with the gi.
There's judo for jiu-jitsu.
Judo for jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And then he has an armbar video. And his arm bars are used by MMA professionals. His brother, Dave Camarillo, they train some of the high up MMA dudes.
But his kryptonite's habanero. I'm start washing my gi in habanero and tie it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And I do it since Brent is too drunk to pull a Brent. I do have to point out that Brent said take it for granted instead of granted.
Oh, you did pull a Brent. Yeah.
And I do have to point out that it's General Custard, not General Custard.
I like Custard.
Yeah.
I like Custard.
Yeah.
Brad said some shit earlier, I left it alone because I'm an asshole that always does
that in there. General Custard.
Oh, he said, I got it. He said Satan, but that might have been a whole
episode. That's how you say Satan.
It's like a saint and the devil together. Satan.
Satan is how you say Satan.
Yeah.
That is true.
The inter Satan.
That is true.
I don't know why.
It's not how you say Satan.
I don't know why you guys constantly just make fun of my God. You will pay.
Satan is how you say Satan.
Satan is how you say Satan.
But Satan is how you say Satan.
I don't know who that is.
I'd like to thank our King Cobra sponsor, Chris Lewis, for providing beverages yeah. during
now
the
last podcast. Now it's every Sunday we better have a pack of King Cobras.
Let's not start that tradition because I don't want to have that obligation.
Chris Lewis.
No.
Yep.
Nope.
Brent says, fuck you for starting the tradition.
I'm not starting. That's not a tradition. That didn't
yeah, if you want to send us something, make it whiskey.
Yeah. The King Cobra fucked me up.
All right. Don't be a retard.
Meth lab in the back and the crack smoke peels through the streets like an early morning fog. Mama's in the slaughterhouse with the hatchet, helping dad they chop early morning hog. I'm catching Z's like an early morning saw when I walk up to the racket, yawning pause. What the fuck, man, I can never get sleep, man. Peeped out the window, what's wrong with y'all? Stood up in my crips and died, Alabama sweatpants and threw my pillow. Looks like daddy caught that motherfucker that tried to sneak in and steal his elbows. They don't know that old man don't hold hands or throw hands, nah, he's rough like a Brillo. Went to the Chevy and pulled out a machete and a gun is heavy and tall as the fidget wheelow. Think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a musty yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump. Boy, don't make me go pop the trunk on you. Think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a muscle yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump, boy. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. 11:30 and I'm pulling up 30, smoking Babbage out the back of my buddy's Monte Carlo. Spitting over some super hot beats with a super hot freak we call the parking lot ho. You know we sipping on that old brown bottle. Bass in the trunk make the whole town wobble. So when we ride around, bitches follow. And tonight one of the bitches is giving us problem. But one of them bitches been fucking one of my homeboy's favorite bitches. And he's been on his hit list for a minute. And I think he's ready to handle his business. He told me, yeah, the wolf get this. And he handed me the Cartier watch that was on his wrist. He said, watch this shit. And he jumped to the trunk and grabbed his biscuit. Think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a musty yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump, boy. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. Think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a musty yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump, boy. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. Two man stand, one's gotta go. One falls down to the ground, one walks down to the road. Mama better call the police, now he's screaming no. Took a buckshot to the chest with a rock salt shell and his movie's slow. All this blood is spilled, enough to give a penguin chills. Hot enough to make a potato smoke at the tip of the hollow steel. In the valley of the hollow field, in the valley of the hollow till. This ain't a figment of my imagination, buddy, this is where I live. Bama, think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a muscle yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump, boy. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. Think he's playing? You better listen what he's saying, punk. Don't make me go pop the trunk on you. He got an old Mossberg and a muscle yoke duffel bag laying in the back of the dump, boy. Don't make me.